ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let's get this garage door up and get moving.
Motor Talk with Toby Hagen.
Yes, welcome to Motor Talk. Toby is a professional motoring writer who undertakes paid contract work for various automotive brands as an individual and his businesses as well. This commercial work is entirely separate from his editorial reviews. Toby is always committed to accuracy and fairness in all his reporting and maintains full editorial independence across all the content he produces. Toby, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Phil. Hello.
Good to have you with us as well. Have you been away in some distant sand dune somewhere?
Oh, not a sand dune, not a luxury island.
Ah.
No, I ducked over to New Caledonia for a bit of a holiday. So, yeah, it was a bit of fun.
Oh, good fun.
Pretty cool.
Was it a busman's holiday? Were you driving? No.
I did drive, but only I got a hire car, which was fairly basic, called a Toyota Raize, which is when I get here.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Raize.
R-A-I-Z-E. And, yeah, pretty basic. And once you fill it up with people, it's pretty full. So, yeah, and I'm pretty sure we breached the GVM on it. So it was it was certainly well loaded.
Hey, sales figures are out. Is the have the electrics continued?
Yeah, look, it was, you know, we touched a fortnight ago on Tesla sales. So Tesla had the top-selling car in the country, the Model Y, 8,000-odd sales, which is enormous. But the big news came out was that BYD got within a few hundred sales of Toyota, which is the closest any brand has been to Toyota for a couple of decades in Australia. So enormous number for that brand. And I think they had a real push towards the end of the year. They put out a press release that essentially said, don't expect it to continue straight away in terms of, I think, the sales will ease off a little bit. I think they had a big push to the end of the financial year. But an enormous month. And, yeah, EVs were huge. They, if you look at EV sales of mid-sized SUVs, so the single biggest segment in the country, for the year to date, so the first 6 months of the year, 32% of all mid-sized SUVs have been fully electric. And for June, it's the first time that EVs outsold diesel and hybrid, so a pretty big big number there, and obviously petrol sales of petrol only vehicles starting to come off. So it's
EVs outsold diesel.
EVs outsold diesel, yeah, for the first time in June. So so yeah, enormous. And when you delve into the figures and you start looking at some of the Chinese brands that are selling enormous numbers of EVs, you know, BYD 10,000, quite a few of them have got EVs that have sold 2,000 or 3,000 in a month. And you look at the number one brand, Toyota, and they sold 192 EVs. So, and all, most of the traditional
brands. Well,
they're not
really selling it. They're not really selling EVs, though, are they? They're selling hybrids.
They've had, Toyota's had one now for a year and a half, year and a half almost in Australia, and they sharpened the, like, 10 grand off the price late last year. So they've got one there, and it's quite a good thing, the BZ4X. But it's, I don't know what's going on. They just don't seem geared up to be able to sell EVs. They're very strong on hybrid. They dominated. They led the way on hybrids. But they seem to be struggling with EVs. And they're not alone. A lot of the mainstream brands, you know, Mazda and Ford and others, are in a similar position. They're, you know, they are trickling along, whereas some of the newcomer brands, and obviously Tesla being in there in that as well, some of those newcomer brands are really surging ahead with EVs, sort of sort of leading the way. So, yeah.
All right, other things around, the there's another new sub $30,000 EV out. It's a Geely thing.
Yeah, Geely EX2, so $26,490. So this is, we were expecting it to come in around or less than 30 grand, and I think what they're aiming for is sort of 30-odd grand drive away. $29,990 or something like that.
$26,000 wouldn't be drive away, no.
No, so it's, but look, extremely strong, and yeah, it's another one of those ones that, you know, we'll probably add a bit of depth to that lower end of the market. And talking of those sales figures again, you go through and look at, you know, your traditional cars in that end of the market, Toyota Yaris, Mazda 2, those sorts of things. And the EVs are sort of taking off because, you know, these days they're cheaper than them. Well, that Geely is cheaper than them. So it's, so yeah, it's pretty, pretty solid in terms of the numbers. And it's, yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, the Atto 1, the BYD Atto 1. It outsold in June. It outsold the Yaris, the Suzuki Swift, and the Mazda 2 combined. So, so yeah, even that entry level part of the market is starting to shift around a bit.
Yeah, I mentioned that BYD is offering refunds to about 1,200 people who thought they were buying a 2026 car, when in fact it was a year before, 2025.
Yeah.
Honest mistake.
Yeah, I mean, look, they say it's it was an administrative error. They're saying it's human error that kicked in here.
Anyway, they're giving them the money back.
They're offering to give them the money back. They've either offered an $1,100 refund, so everyone can get that, and everyone can get the refund. But I think they said last count it was 600 odd people had said that they were happy with the refund, but anyone is entitled to the full refund. Sorry, 600 for the 1,100. Anyone's entitled to the refund if they want it. I'm not aware that they've released those numbers yet or whether it's been finalised. But yeah, I mean, look, that's obviously, you know, you've got to stick your hands up on that one, haven't you, and say, we made a mistake.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, a little bit embarrassing, but, you know, they had a huge month and I'm sure it's
they deserve to... They deserve it, whatever they cop.
Yeah.
But there is a plate on the car, isn't there, which says when it was built?
There is, but I think what they were told was... No, I think the plate was right, but I think... I don't believe it's the salespeople's fault, but I think on the forms they signed, it said you got a 2026 car, and I believe it was one customer who went to get insurance, and the insurance company said, hang on, that's not a 2026 model, it's a 2025 model. Uh-huh. And they made the point, there's no difference in the cars, it's literally just the build plate, but it can impact your residual values. It's in the industry's eyes, it's seen as a one-year-older car, even though it may only be a one-week-older car, but it's still still seen as a one-year-older car, so yeah.
Mitchell from Wentworth, let's take calls, 1-300-800-222. Hi, Mitchell.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we?
Not bad. I've pushed you down the hill. Come on, clutch start. Away you go.
Considering buying one of these new EVs getting around, and they're pretty popular, eh?
Yep.
Now,
what's your question, Mitch?
Mate, is it worth it?
Well, it depends on the model. So there's some that are very sharp and very good value, and there's others that aren't so much. So, and you know, you can say that across the entire market, whether you're looking at petrol cars, diesel cars, electric cars, whatever. So, yeah, there's some that are sharper, some that aren't. But
what are you trying to do with it, Mitchell? You're driving around town, you're in the bush. What's up?
A bit of bush bashing, mate, this and that, you know. It's got to be an all-rounder. But the main concern, mate, you know, I'm pretty close to Mildura. There's a few cars getting stolen every day, mate. What's the anti-theft on these things, mate? That's my main concern.
It's the same as any other car. So they've all got locks and some of them have got alarm systems. So there's going to be no difference between the security systems in them.
Are they easy? They're not easy to pinch. Are they easy to pinch?
No, I mean, no easier than any other car.
Right.
And, you know, we've seen in Victoria in particular, they've had some big issues with theft, with thieves using technology to break into the OBD, the onboard diagnostic systems, and effectively trick the car into thinking that there's a key there. So there have been a lot of issues with that, but that is not a drivetrain specific thing. It's to do with certain cars, and there have been quite a few Toyotas in that mix because, you know, things like a Land Cruiser, there's lots of them on the road. They're very valuable cars and they're easy to sell. So there's been a few of those going. So Toyota's actually stepping up its security systems in some of those cars, including the Land Cruiser and the Prado, to try and tackle that. And they're even going to offer an aftermarket fix, where they are offering an aftermarket fix for it as well, which will be an added cost. But yeah, trying to do that too. But yeah, in terms of the security, you know, as I said, it's agnostic in terms of the drivetrain. It's they've all got locks and so on. So yeah,
okay, go with it, Mitch. Take it out, have a look.
Depends on the one.
Yep. Depends on the one. Okay, thank you. By the way, in the footy, Geelong's beaten St Kilda. Pretty convincingly, 15, 12 to 11, 9. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Dane from Denniston's been waiting on there. Hi, Dane.
Hi, hello, evening to you both. Look, I've just got some basic questions. I'm looking at buying a four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Sydney, so it needs to be a vehicle that's okay in the city, but I'm at a stage where I sort of feel I'd like to be able to go out, you know, anywhere and within reason drive on any, reasonable road out back. I just wonder what you might think was something appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, look, to get those two requirements that are pretty much opposite ends of the spectrum,
you're making
compromises somewhere. So it's you're going to make compromises in the city because you're dragging around a lot of hardware that's going to be doing nothing around town, you know, dual range transfer cases and heavier, often ladder frame chassis and stuff like that. So there's, there will be compromises in town. And if you go for one of the more soft roaders, they're more car-like in terms of the way they drive around town, but they're not as good off-road and they're not as capable in the really rough stuff, and some of them don't have full-size spare tyres and that sort of stuff. So
obviously
a full-size spare, if you're going to be heading to remote areas, is a pretty important thing. And it tends to push you towards either dual cab utes, which a lot of people obviously go for, or things like an Isuzu MU-X, a Toyota Prado, a Ford Everest are probably the three standouts in that class. There is actually another one coming later this year, which is a Pajero. So the Mitsubishi Pajero is making a comeback, and that'll be added to that market too. We don't know. We know the basics of it. It'll be based on the Triton. We're expecting it to kick off at $60,000 or $70,000, but there's a lot more detail to come on that car, including what it looks like. But that's another one in the mix. But those three I mentioned there are probably the standouts, and probably the sweet spots around about the Ford Everest, because it's a better car than the Isuzu. It's more expensive than the Isuzu, but you can probably mount a case on value. The Prado is an excellent car, but the Prado is quite expensive, and the Everest is probably a little bit sharper in overall value.
Right, and would any of those three lend itself to being more able to be handled in the city?
Yeah, I mean, they'll all do a decent job in the city. I would say I'd almost probably reverse it, probably say the Prado will probably be one of the better ones in town. The Everest is very good as well, but the Prado is also good in town, and the Isuzu probably a fraction less so. So they'll all do a decent job in town. No. But what are you coming out of? What car are you stepping out of?
Well, Honda Civic.
Yeah, okay. So it's going to be an extremely different car to that. You're going to have a lot more weight. You'll be sitting up higher. It's not going to be as sharp in terms of the way it turns into corners and so on. So, and all three of them will have that issue because they're bigger, heavier cars with chunkier tyres for off-roading and that sort of stuff. But So you're going backwards in that everyday sort of usability and dynamics, but that equally, they are comfortable cars that will deal fine with city traffic. As I said, you're going to be dragging around more weight and hardware that won't be getting a whole lot of use in town. But you sort of need that if you're going to be doing that remote touring and off-road driving.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, all right. Great. Thank you very much.
No worries,
I think I'm on the right track then.
Good on you. Good luck with it, and I hope it works out for you. It's tough at the car trying to sell cars, isn't it, Toby? Poor old Peugeot. Gone. No, the distributor has handed back the distribution rights.
They've announced they're handing it back. They haven't.
So what does that mean? That you won't be able to buy one in Australia anymore?
Well, so
unless someone else takes it up.
Yes, it's done by the importer, Inchcape, which also looks after Subaru and a couple of Chinese brands as well. So very, very experienced importer. They've dealt with a lot of brands over the years, and they have a lot of dealerships and so on as well. But they've announced that they will hand that back. Now, the parent company to Peugeot is Stellantis, which has a whole bunch of brands, including Citroen and Fiat and Jeep and a whole bunch of other ones. Mm-hmm. And Stellantis has said that they will keep that brand going in Australia. They just haven't announced how it will continue. So one option is they can bring it into their fold, obviously, and they already do Jeep and Alfa Romeo and others in Australia. Leap Motor is one of their Chinese brands. So maybe they'll do that, but we're still waiting to hear exactly what will happen. But, yeah, look, this is one of those things. I mean, we hear, we've had, 10 or 12 brands already come into Australia, predominantly Chinese brands come into Australia. We've got one of the busiest markets in the world in terms of diversity of brands. And there are another dozen odd brands, some of which have confirmed, some of others are expected to come to Australia in the next couple of years. So it's an enormously competitive market. There's no question that some of the existing brands are under intense pressure, and some of them will potentially fall by the wayside. And equally, some of the newcomer brands probably won't survive because, again, there's so much competition. And I think it'd be an interesting one to go around to all these brands, particularly the Chinese brands, and say, okay, give us your sales forecast for 2027. And I think if you added them all up, normally we buy about 1.2 million cars a year in Australia. Mm-hmm. I reckon if you added them all up, it'd probably exceed 2 million. Like by the time they all said, oh, we'll sell 50,000, we'll sell 80,000. And clearly that's not going to work because, as I said, it'll be somewhere around about 1.2 million. So someone's going to have to lose sales somewhere.
Mm. Yep, indeed. All right, 1-300-800-222 is my number. Scott in Blacktown. The line's free, by the way, if you want one. 1-300-800-222. Scott from Blacktown. Hi, Scott.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
I've got a Honda iX35 Elite 2012 model, the active four-wheel drive type. I'm thinking about giving it to my nephew. He's just turned 19, so but he's not going to go like any extreme off-roading or anything, but if he goes on a like a fire trail, for example, and the weather changes and it gets foggy and he needs the four-wheel drive to come in, and it's got the downhill control and that kind of stuff. It's got a locker button. I don't know if you'd be familiar with the Honda iX35s. Mm-hmm. I was wondering how
far it'll go.
Yeah, under that. that's what my nephew will probably try and do.
Yeah. Well, firstly, have you definitely got the four-wheel drive one? Because a lot of those were two-wheel drive, so that'd be the first thing I'd be checking, is that it's definitely the all-wheel drive model.
It's four-wheel drive. It's got the buttons. It's got the locker.
So that locker button, so normally a diff lock, like you've either got centre diff lock, front diff lock, or rear diff lock, and a lot of them will have I think that one you're talking about is the center locker, and it's not a traditional diff lock. It's essentially saying, so normally your car will run in front wheel drive. A lot of the soft rotor type SUVs will run in front wheel drive generally, but when they detect wheel slip, so when one of the wheels slips, it'll then apply brakes to the wheel that's slipping and effectively send the torque to other parts of the car. So by hitting that locker one, you're saying, okay, I want to constantly send some drive to the rear as well as the front, but it is not a traditional locking differential. So it's not going to get you anywhere near as far as a traditional off-roader will. And that's the other thing you have, and this is something that applies to any car, whether it's a Land Cruiser or Prado or whatever, is once you hit things like slippery mud, if you're just in normal mode, normal everything, and you hit that slippery mud, the car, the stability control system will detect the car sliding around, potentially apply the brakes, which is the last thing you want if you're in soft mud, and potentially pull power to try and stop the car wheel spinning. And again, in mud or sand, you do want a bit of wheel spin to keep the thing going. So the way some of those heavy-duty four-wheel drives get around it, when you select low range, they'll either put in, they'll have a different program, so different mapping for the traction control system, or in some cases, they disable it altogether. So they'll get rid of that traction control and stability control and just let the car do its sliding and moving around because you're only doing slow speed stuff. Now, you're not going to have any of that in your iX35. So again, if he's going to hit muddy roads and stuff, he needs to be aware that you need to probably turn things like stability control off. You need to be aware of the limitations of the car because it's just not going to go nearly as far as a proper off-roader. Yes, you might have some extra traction, but you've got to be a little bit careful. You also don't want to go thumping it underneath because, most off-roaders, most proper off-roaders will have underbody protection. That thing will have a plastic cover for aerodynamics, and that's about it. So if you give it a decent whack underneath, you could be spewing out some fluid you don't want to lose.
Yeah, there's nothing covered underneath. I've popped my head under and had a look to make sure it was the four-wheel drive and looked, and I thought, oh, you wouldn't want to hit anything.
No, definitely not. As I said, a lot of them have got the plastic covers these days, but that's purely aerodynamics. Like it's done to smooth the airflow and reduce a little bit of fuel use, basically.
Okay. Yeah, all right, Scott. Bogged. Thanks, mate.
I'll get bogged pretty much, like just the traction-wise, because he's not going to go extreme sort of stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on a bunch of stuff, including the tyres. You know, once you're on those road tyres in mud, it's pretty easy to fill them up with mud quickly. But I wouldn't get too ambitious as a short story.
Mm. All right, Scott.
Cool, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Chris from Dundas. I'm just adding this, Toby, because you know my concerns. Chris from Dundas says, Toby, will future improvements in EVs include providing a spare tyre? Not everyone has the skill to do their own tyre repairs. Toby, I'm not asking you for a comment.
No, they will. They will. And some already have them. Some, very few.
Yeah.
But some. But we'll get there eventually.
someone's texted saying Peugeot and Jeep were the first companies to ever sell cars in Australia. Very sad they're leaving. Is that right? Would that be right?
I don't think so. Because Jeep, I think, didn't the Jeep only start in the 1940s, for starters, which is you had Willys and stuff, post-World War II.
You had T Model Fords here before then.
You had that well before then. And so Citroën was one of the longest-running brands before they pulled out a year or two ago. Yeah. And Citroën was one of the early brands into Australia. But no, I mean, there were a bunch of brands that have these days discontinued, including a lot out of America. But
let's ignore that. Yeah, that's not right. Graham's on the Hume. G'day, Graham.
Good afternoon or evening or morning.
Afternoon. Well, I think whereabouts are you? Where are you on the Hume? Whereabouts?
To me, it's morning. I'm almost at Yass, heading back to Melbourne.
Yeah, well it's mid evening. Graham, but hello to you anyway.
Tapes. My daughter's actually, I mean, this may have been a bit out of your spoke. 2009 200 series.
Mm.
Do you know of any major problems that would be with them?
No, so Land Cruiser 200 series. I mean, the early cars, as you probably know, had issues with excessive oil use, but Toyota did address that and I believe solved the problem. Look, there will be some things here and there that they'll be known to fail, but I'm not aware of any major things that would stop you from potentially buying the car. Obviously.
Yeah, well, it's been looked after. It's only, I think it hasn't got 200,000 on it yet.
Yeah, which is a baby for that. I mean, you can get, hundreds. I was looking the other day at 100 series Land Cruisers, and there's one there with 600,000 Ks on it, secondhand, and, 500,000 kilometre 100 series Land Cruisers.
Is every day.
Everywhere. And same with 200 series. You can get ones that are easily up over 500,000 Ks. So 200,000 is a baby for that car. And, you know, I think some of the best buys in those markets are, you know, something like that, a 200 series, say 200,000 Ks on it like that, that spent its life just tooling around town doing the kid run, and all of a sudden you can buy it. You've got a great adventure car that hasn't been bashed around off-road and is potentially pretty cool for that sort of stuff. So,
I think it was actually mainly like the farmer's wife's car.
Yeah, right.
And they used it to tow the caravan.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's immaculate inside.
Yeah, right. And that's pretty cool. I mean, look, the one thing, Toyota four-wheel drive, so whether it's Hilux, Prado or Land Cruiser, they do have fairly short service intervals, 6-month or 10,000 kilometre service intervals. So you'd want to make sure those boxes have been ticked, make sure that it has had the servicing done, because particularly turbo engines don't like missed services.
Okay. I think it's got a full service book with it, so I'll be checking that out.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Grant. Good on you.
Thank you.
Good luck with it. 1-300-800-222. Toby Hagen's with us. Evelyn from Epping. Hello, Evelyn.
Hi. I've got a question for Toby. I've got a Honda Jazz. I've done about 60,000 Ks on it. It's 10 years old. Mm. I'm still concerned about how much petrol I'm using. We've already got a Model Y my husband has, so we've got all the solar and stuff and the batteries. I just don't know whether I should upgrade to a hybrid or electric. And the thing I love about the Jazz is the space in the back and the fact you can put the seats and everything down. Mm,
the magic seats.
Is there a hybrid that will do that, that's not too big? Or
yeah, I mean, there's quite a few, not so much in that Jazz market, so that small hatchback market. I touched on a few of them earlier, like the Toyota Yaris and Mazda 2 and those sorts of things. But these days you can get EVs that are cheaper than those. And certainly nicer to drive, because once you're in the Jazz was a little bit different. You had the CVT automatic, so it did that worked pretty well in maximizing performance from a small engine. But when you've got a 5 or 6 speed automatic in a small engine, you often have to drive the engine pretty hard to get decent performance. So you're revving it pretty hard, and it's not much fun. You get in those little EVs and you've got a heap of torque, that pulling power that you want, and it's they're very accessible and very easy to drive around town. So I find them far nicer and far easier to drive. And if you're used to an EV already in the Tesla and used to the charging and all that sort of stuff, then I'd certainly say have a look at the Tesla. But have a look at another EV. And as I said, that there are ones there that are cheaper than the entry-level hatches these days. So,
Which one would you recommend? I'm just a bit nervous about having a Chinese car, that's all.
Well, unfortunately, I can't recommend anything but that, because if you want a sub 30 gram one, that's all there is. So it's the one we touched on earlier, the Geely EX2. The GAC Ion UT is slightly over 30, but it's also good buying because it's got slightly longer range than the other ones in that market. The BYD Atto 1, which is the cheapest, so it's roughly 27, something like that, 27, 28 drive away. And Yeah, and then from then you step up into slightly bigger and more powerful ones. You know, they start to head towards 35, 40 grand. But something like a JQ J5, for example, is pretty good buying. Yeah. They're all Chinese. And unfortunately, yeah. you just don't have a choice because they're the ones dominating that entry-level electric market. If you really, really don't want Chinese, and keep in mind that your Tesla's out of China, unless you got a... No, actually, all Tesla Model Ys are out of China. Yeah. The early Tesla Model 3s weren't. So you've seen, I guess, Chinese build quality in that regard. But
The other concern I have is that, you know, with one electric car in the house, maybe we should have one that we can... If we needed to go on a big trip, that we had sort of one backup that would go with petrol or something.
Yeah, you know, possibly. Like, when was the last time you did that?
Oh, we often go to Melbourne, but we do it in the Tesla, and it is a bit slow. It is a bit stop and start, a bit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, cool. And if you're any of those small EVs that I just mentioned, they're not going to be nearly as easy to drive on a long trip as your Tesla because they have slower charging. They've got shorter range, so they're really around town EVs. They're not road trip EVs. They're around town EVs. Whereas your Tesla can be. Easily a road trip car, as you know. So, so if you want to stick with hybrids,
maybe, you know.
Yeah. So you then, I would point you more towards the small SUV, SUVs. You got more choices there. Hyundai Kona is probably top of the pops, so that's a good option.
So you reckon that's a good model? That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's definitely. So they do an electric, a hybrid, and a non-hybrid, a regular petrol. But the hybrid one's really good. Yeah. And yeah, it's probably the pick in that market at the moment. So it's a terrific thing.
So the Hyundai Kona might be the one.
Okay. Hyundai Kona. Yep.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Toby.
Cool. Righto. Thanks, Evelyn. Okay. Bye bye. This is Motor Talk, and you're talking with Toby Hagen. Phil and Toby, we're looking at a Zeekr S7X Performance. Anything specific to consider, says Heathy Boy?
Don't bother with the push-button door handles. Okay. So, it's a surprisingly good car. I would actually be happier in the non-performance, just the single-motor one, save a bit of money, and as I said, not get the door handles. I think they might have made the door handles now optional, but what I don't like about the door handles, you press the button, and you have to sort of stand a little bit clear of the door because it then automatically opens the door. And if you're in the way, it senses you there so it doesn't open, and then you've got to manually open it beyond that. And then when you get in the car, you put your foot on the brake and it automatically closes the door so you don't have to touch anything, which is terrific the first few times. And then after that, you go, this is a bit gimmicky and I'm sick of it.
I'm sick of it.
So I just go
to the door. Where's the door handle?
And I'm trying to think. I think it's the 7X. That if you get those fancy door handles, it still has the old door handles there and they don't do anything. So it's a bit weird. Whereas on the Zeekr X, the smaller one, they don't. They get rid of those. So it's a cleaner look. So that'd be the main thing. Zeekr's selling in surprisingly big numbers. Don't ignore some of the rivals, which the Tesla Model Y is the most obvious one. Mm-hmm. So there's other options there, but the Zeekr's certainly a very solid one.
Okie doke. Tim from Mullumbimby. Hello, Tim.
G'day, guys. I've been very happy with a Nissan X-Trail that's got the four-wheel drive, but now recently my mechanic did something to it and I don't like it anymore, so I'm looking at going to either a hybrid or full electric. I don't have solar and a charger at home, so, you know, it's going to be inconvenient because I have to install that. But the J5 and J7 or the BYD like C line are the ones that are catching my eye. But between the like J7 and the BYD, what are you thinking?
So I guess out of the C lines, you've got four to choose from, a C line 5, 6, 7 and 8. So, and they all step up in size. That said, the C line 7 is the only fully electric. The other three are plug-in hybrids. So it depends whether you want to go electric or plug-in hybrid.
My daily commute is sort of 30 kilometres from Mullumbimby into Byron and back, so 40 by the time you return. But I do still have parents down in Sydney and my brother's up on the Gold Coast, so I do some, 100-plus K days and 1,000 K days.
The Gold Coast wouldn't be an issue. The Sydney one, obviously, would take a little bit of planning, but these days between Sydney and Brisbane, there's quite a few very fast chargers, but you'd want to look at So a JQ J5 is not going to be a great car for that road trip for exactly what I was talking about a few minutes ago, which is it's not particularly fast charging and it's not super long range. So that I wouldn't be doing a Sydney-Brisbane run in that or a Sydney-Mullumbimby run in that. So
size-wise, is that a bit smaller than an X-Trail or is
The C-Line 5 and the JQ J5 will both be smaller than an X-Trail, but once you get up to a C-Line 8, that's bigger than an X-Trail, and a C-Line 7 and a JQ J7 are similar to an X-Trail. So they're sort of mid-sized SUVs. So, and the C-Line 6 and stuff. But look, if you're going to be doing those long runs, I would be probably point you towards some of the plug-in hybrids, which is C-Line 6, the JQ J7, and, you know, you can look at a Chery as well. There's some Chery ones out there that do a pretty good job. A Geely Starray is also a decent thing. So, and they're a little bit generic, in both in their styling and some of their features and so on. So, they've all got their pros and cons, but they'll all sort of do 100 kilometres plus generally on electricity. But you mentioned before you don't have charging at home. You obviously do have a PowerPoint, and given the kilometres you're doing, that will work fine for your 40-kilometre round trip per day. So you'll be able to plug it in and run it off that.
We've got a charger at work, which is handy.
Yeah.
But, and the only other sort of consideration is just like any kind of going on the bad roads around here.
There are a few up that way. Those narrow ones that go over the mountains there. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, that's it. Which ones take those sort of narrow off-road, like not off-road, but you know what I mean?
The bumpy. You're coming down to tyres there in terms of, so when you get the potholes and stuff and you club a pothole, it's not going to be great, and most of them don't have spare tyres and they're all sort of on-road tyres. So I wouldn't know which one's going to hold up best to a pothole strike. None of them are necessarily set up for that. But then again, neither's an X-Trail really. Like an X-Trail's not a proper off-road car. So I wouldn't expect it to be necessarily much worse or anything, you know, much different to an X-Trail essentially.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, Tim. Good on you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222. This is an edition of Motor Talk. You can ring and ask Toby a question if you want. There are some lines there if you want. 1-300-800-222. Brendan and Shepherd on the text line. Toby, do you think there'll be issues with the large purchase numbers of EVs and charging points, particularly in rural areas going forward? Also, what do you think about EV values and what are they like in 5 to 10 years? I don't think they'll last. And you won't be 500,000 Ks as you can do in a well-maintained Land Cruiser. This gets to the question of whether EV is going to be suitable for everything, and they're not.
Yeah, and look, the charging points first up, I mean, we're already finding at some busy times there aren't enough charging points.
Yeah.
It's a chicken and egg situation. There's no doubt Australia needs a lot more of them, a lot more charging points. And, the difference between petrol and diesel or internal combustion engines and electric is that a lot of people, most EV owners, charge up overnight at home, so they don't need public charging. But when they need it, they really need it. Like they're on a road trip,
It's the road trip issue. It's not normally at home or you're just around town, it's not an issue.
Yeah.
But the road trip is an issue.
Yeah. 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 The longevity thing is an interesting one. So there was a study out of the UK, I think it was earlier this year, might have been late last year, saying that EVs are now lasting longer in terms of kilometres than internal combustion engine cars.
Okay.
Now, that's a general statement. And once you're honing in on something like a Land Cruiser, they are generally engineered for longer. And there's not a whole lot of cars that'll do 500,000 Ks without, you know, significant work.
There aren't many, no.
No. So it's so that's, you know, your Land Cruiser is a little bit different. But there's no reason someone can't engineer an EV to do a similar sort of job in terms of electric motors are extremely reliable and simple. They're basic, very basic things compared with an internal combustion engine. A battery, so a battery pack, they generally, and again, there was a recent study out 2 or 3 weeks ago saying that battery degradation is nowhere near as high as everyone was first predicting. 1.5% a year, I think it was, something like that. So your average EV or average battery, lithium-ion battery, is generally designed for at least a few thousand cycles. So let's say your car's made for 400 kilometres of range, 500. you're looking at well over 1 million kilometres that the battery has essentially been engineered for. So it's so the batteries, I wouldn't have an issue at all with batteries doing a few hundred thousand kilometres, possibly up to 500,000. And, you know, GWM, for example, has an unlimited kilometre warranty on its batteries. Admittedly, they do put a kilometre warranty on it if you're using it for commercial purposes. And let's face it, anyone doing 300,000 or 400,000 Ks is probably going to be doing Uber driving or something to get to get that level of Ks up. But, yeah, the reality is, yeah, they can, you know, theoretically they can make them last as long. It's horses for courses in terms of how they engineer the cars. And the last one's residual values. So what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 months is residual values of diesel vehicles and some bigger pickup trucks and so on come off. And we've seen EVs go in the other direction. So EV residuals are now stronger. Now, EV residuals on some models aren't quite as strong as some good hybrids, for example. But, you know, the used car market, as I've said previously, it's supply and demand. And if people want those vehicles, if there's demand for them in 5 or 10 years, people will pay for it. And, you know, what we're seeing now is decent demand for used EVs. So I don't think that's going to change enormously over the next few years. But, you know, if fuel is somehow 50 cents a litre in a few years, then, yeah, it probably will drop off. But I don't think that's about to happen.
Leanne is in Paddington and wants to know about Chloe and how she's going. This is your
driving. She's going well, but I can't get her back into a manual. She's only because I don't have a manual kicking around at the moment. But okay. She's going very well on the driving.
Yep.
And certainly, I mean, the first couple of weeks was I had eyes like dinner plates. So it was pretty pretty eye opening. But she's a lot better now. And I think if anything, I would say the biggest criticism I can make is there's a hint of overconfidence kicking in, which I need to pull back and say, hang on a minute, you're going a lot better, but you've still got a heap to learn. That's so right. It's, she's going well.
Oh, good. Okay. Let keep us posted. A lot of people want to know. Paul says, I've regularly travelled Melbourne to Brisbane in my Tesla S. Oh, okay. Hold on one. No problems. I especially like the comfort and the crop up food and drink stops every 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
Never a problem.
Yeah,
especially as I have free supercharging for the rest of my life of the car.
So the early Tesla Model S's had free charging as part of it. Now Tesla hasn't offered that for 10 odd years or 9 years, something like that. But and I chatted to I got in an Uber, I don't know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and he just bought a Model S, and partly for that because he got the free charging with it. So he said it's great.
Other texters here saying plenty of Tesla S's have covered more than 500,000 Ks.
Mm.
They're still going strong. The batteries are still going great.
Yeah. You can certainly do it for sure. Mm. It's
Plenty of texters too saying, why don't we make electric cars in Australia? We can make better EVs than China, says my texter. Well,
I don't think we're going to make them as cheap as China is the problem.
The problem is that car manufacturing is not what it was, is it? It's highly robotic now.
Yeah, it needs enormous scale. And
you need a huge amount of capital to set it up because of the robotics.
That's right. And so these days out of a factory, you need to be selling, say, 300,000 cars to make the factory viable, and that's before you engineer it and everything else. So ultimately, ideally, you'd want to build it in multiple factories, as Toyota does with things like Camry. Yeah. So, when you've got Australia, our top-selling car is typically around about 50,000 cars a year, sometimes a little bit more. So you need to make up those other 250,000 sales somewhere around the world, and Australia has not been for 20 odd years a solid export market for cars.
What's been our best export of cars ever? Well, we've never been a big exporter.
No,
but that's because the multinationals running the joint never wanted to export cars from Australia.
Yeah, I mean there was a bit of particularly with Ford and GM in the last between say 2000 and 2010. They'd prefer to say, hey, America's, we can do it in America. We don't need these guys down under to show us how to build cars.
Yeah.
And that sort of hurt things. We also, a lot of exports around about 2007, 8, 9 were hurt by the strong Australian dollar. Remember, the dollar was $1.10 at one point against the US.
That's right.
And they were trying to export cars to America. So that really made it hard.
Mm.
So, but no, there have been times. I mean, there's been, you know, back in the 70s and so on, they're exporting cars. And I remember going to being in Africa, whenever it was, 3 or 4 years or 5 years ago. And driving past and seeing an HQ Holden in a wrecking yard. So there's so yeah, there's stuff like that. So yeah, there's you know, exports have been fairly solid at times. We've exported cars to China, Thailand, other places. So so yeah, they exported cars to, we exported long wheelbase Holden Caprices to China around about 2010-ish.
Yeah.
And I remember they had to beef up the horns in the cars because they were failing, because in China they beep the horn constantly sometimes. And it's not a sign of anger as it is here. It's just a, you know, I'm letting someone know I'm here. So they had all these horns failing after, you know, a year or two because they were constantly beeping on them. So
1-300-800-222. This is Nightlife, and this is an edition of Motor Talk with Toby Hagen. We've got lines 3-1-300-800-222.
Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Radio.
The Pajero is gearing up for a revival within months. What's happening?
Yeah, that's that, what I was touching on earlier. So it's going to be based on the Mitsubishi Triton underpinnings, which is quite a change for the Pajero. Because in the early 2000s, or 2000, it shifted over to essentially a monocoque, a more car-like construction underneath, and that kept it going until, well, for 20-odd years. But, yeah, it's making a comeback. And it sounds like it's going to be a little bit more like the Pajero Sport, which is the that was the Triton-based SUV previously. But, yeah, shaping up initially to be a diesel, so 2.4-litre diesel engine, turbo diesel engine. But they've also sort of shown off a... well, an electric version. They're saying a hybrid version will also make an appearance as well. So it'll be quite interesting to see how that goes. Pajero was obviously a much loved nameplate. 1983, it first hit the roads in Australia, and you know, we had Patrols and Prados and Land Cruisers and so on, but Pajero had a very solid following. So I think there'll be a lot of people keen to see how it goes.
Mm. Hey, Fiat revealed an all electric replacement for its iconic Ape Ute.
Yeah. This is the I love seeing those things in Italy.
These are the tiny little. Are they three wheelers?
Generally,
yeah.
And it's and normally they've got some Italian farmer that's about double the size of the car trying to drive the thing. So it's it's
you know, but the things I'm talking about. They're when I say three wheelers, they are three wheelers.
Yeah,
there's a kind of motorcycle type bar you steer, you drive them with.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. They're basically a motorbike ute, or a scooter ute, and they're cool looking things. And yeah, Fiat's done one called the Tree, TRIS, which is just a really cool looking car. So it's a or ute or motorbike, whatever we want to call it. But it's only got a 6.9 kilowatt hour battery, which is tiny, about a tenth the size of your average EV. So 88 kilometers of range. And it's got a 9-kilowatt motor, so it's not much power. Top speed, 45 k's an hour, but it's a really cool-looking thing. So it's, you know, unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever see it in Australia.
You're not going to see it here, are you?
But
speaking of cute little utes, though, when we mentioned this in the program, I think a couple of editions ago, about the tiny Japanese utes too.
Yeah.
Which some people are importing privately, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because they've become a bit like the Suzuki Jimny's become kind of chic. These are too.
So, yeah, like the Suzuki Carrion stuff, which and Daihatsu has got one as well. So, and they are trendy these days. So, yeah, there's a lot of places privately importing them, and they look cool. They're pretty cool little things. They've only got tiny payload, like it's nothing like a normal ute, but I don't think people are necessarily buying them to go load lugging.
Joel from Brisbane says, didn't Holden export to Japan, which was rebadged as a Mazda?
Thinking, well, it was an HQ, a Holden with a rotary engine. So it was, they had the Mazda rotary in it, which I never drove one, but everyone said it was terrible because it had no torque and a big heavy car around it. So, yeah.
George in South Australia sent us a great picture. Well, it's a bit confronting in a way, but he says, evening, I saw a 2012 documentary about Don McCullen, who's regarded by many as the greatest living war photojournalist. Among some other confronting image, I noticed a burnt-out Australian-made E.H. Holden motor car in war-torn Biafra, which seemed pretty incongruous.
There you go.
Yeah. They made their way around the world.
No, they did. I mean, Holden at times had very strong exports, but, you know, it was hurt sometimes, as I said, by exchange rates and the types of cars they were trying to sell.
Arnold's on the line from Geraldton. G'day, Arnold.
G'day, how are you going? Tony or... Phil, I've had a BZ4X Touring on order since May.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we're talking about 3 or 4 months delivery. Have you heard anything? They don't even know when it's going to start to be made.
It's already here. So I drove one. Drove one a week or two ago.
I know that. I know this.
Oh, you mean your specific one?
I've ordered one.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit odd because, you know, I mentioned before that Toyota with EV sales has been extremely soft, and I would have thought if they got people like you banging the door down saying, give me my car, that they'd be pretty keen to stick one on a boat and get it over here. So I'm not sure why it's taking quite that long. It's obviously a bit, you know, as I said, I would have imagined it would be the other way around. They'd have more cars than customers at the moment, but clearly with that one, they're, you know, they've got you waiting.
Advertising like mad at the AFL and things like that, and of course, when you get a price, they can't give you a price you trade in because
they want to wait until the car's here.
They've got to wait until the car's here because
that's right, because they don't want to price your car yet for that.
You can't get a fixed agreement, you know.
That is frustrating. Don't know, but you know, push the dealer on it because they ask the dealer if they've got a VIN, a vehicle identification number, and if they don't, when are they going to get one? Because if they've got a VIN, the car's been built and it's just waiting on shipping and getting it out here.
Sorry to hear it, Arnold.
Yeah.
Okay, Toby. Before you go, what have you been driving? A RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
I have, yes.
Any good?
It is good. It's great. And it's a really good plug-in hybrid. One of the things I like is they've made it so when you're in EV mode and you floor the accelerator, it stays in EV mode. It doesn't then fire up the petrol engine.
Mm-hmm.
So it has more of that EV type of driving feel to it. Once you've drained the battery, it has fractionally less power, but it's still pretty solid. Certainly zippier and nicer around town at sort of 80 or 100 k's an hour. It doesn't feel quite as perky, but it's still fine. It's still got plenty of grunt and really solid in terms of the dynamics and so on. So yeah, I'm a big fan. That said, it's not cheap. So you're looking at sort of 65 odd grand, somewhere around there. So it does step up a bit in price.
It's an expensive thing, isn't it? You know,
it does. But Toyota's saying they think they will get 30% of their RAV4 sales, they're predicting, will be plug-in hybrid. So there's a lot of people queuing up. And they only do a couple of model variants. And it's all at the top end of the range. So in terms of the more expensive model variants.
Right.
To have a 30% cut through on that is pretty solid. So and it shows you that there's demand for that sort of thing. So
you've been driving the Land Cruiser Hybrid too.
Land Cruiser Hybrid, which doesn't make nearly as much sense to me as the diesel. So it's because it's a performance hybrid. It's not a fuel-saving hybrid.
Okay.
So it uses more fuel than the diesel. Got more power, but it uses more fuel. And the one thing I found is every time the engine starts and cuts out, which is quite often, you just hear this sort of deep, very quiet but deep thud. It's the exhaust, just a boom in the exhaust, which around town I found pretty frustrating. It's booming away and you're going, what's going on? So I'd go with the diesel, but it's you know, they're saying it's anyone who wants a bit more power, that's the one to get.
All right, Toby, terrific. Time has beaten us, but thanks for coming in. Terrific. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
Good on you. Toby Hagen with an edition of Motor Talk.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.